This is Fuel.
Fuel for thought.
Fuel injected.
Fuel for your business.
Jet Fuel.
Welcome to Fuel, the new business podcast for the UK business development community, brought to you in association with The Advertist, business development tools and insight for creative marketing and communications agencies. And I'm your host, a Smith called Keith. In the world of sales, just like comedy, you need to master the art of timing and accuracy. But unlike comedy, new business is no laughing matter, especially in this economy. So you need the right information at the right time to help you make intelligent and relevant new business approaches. And right now, if you approach any prospect with a convincing point of view, you're going to be heard. Here's how to be heard. Subscribe to The Advertist. Every day you'll get news, insight, facts, figures, people moves, tenders, lists, and merger and acquisition, crowdfunding, and venture capital updates. There is no better way to power your new business. The Advertist gets you to the door, all you have to do is push through it. Visit The Advertist at www.theadvertist.com. That's theadvertist.com for a free trial, or call the team on 0203 356 3717 today. Now, we're going to dive into the world of film in a few minutes with a fascinating chat about how short films can help drive your new business and customer acquisition. But before we do, here's our very own one-man rom-com, Jeremy Davis, with this week's words of wisdom.
If there's one thing we can't stand in the cutthroat, red-hot, 100-mile-per-hour world of new business, it's metaphor. New business needs to be no-nonsense, straight down the line. Does exactly what it says on the tin. Prospects won't give you the time of day if you aren't quick and to the point. Using metaphor is like giving them the cherry on the top without any of the cake. Metaphorically speaking. I'm exaggerating, of course. There are a few exceptions which prove the rule, and the most powerful of these is, without doubt, the metaphorical silver bullet, which also happens to be one of my personal favourite metaphors, just ahead of the sliding doors moment. Although the silver bullet idea owes its existence to a late 18th century legend rather than an underwhelming late 20th century British movie. In folklore, of course, the silver bullet is the only weapon that can kill the dreaded werewolf. And it has passed into popular vernacular as a metaphor for a solution to a particularly beastly problem. In new business, depending on whom you listen to, there seem to be enough silver bullets to power an army. Some say it's social media. According to others, it's a high-profile speaking opportunity at some industry bigwig conference. But, to mix my metaphors into a metaphorical cocktail, the holy grail of silver bullets, principally because its existence is undisputed, but no one can summon up the courage to successfully seek it, is the referral. Referrals are our best source of new business. It's the agency MD's first line of defence against a new business person. It's the equivalent of, not tonight, I'm washing my hair, used to shut down a conversation about getting involved in the messy business of proactive lead generation. Actually, that's another dodgy metaphor, because washing your hair actually involves some sort of effort on your part, whereas the type of agency boss that comes out with that particular line makes no effort whatsoever when it comes to new business. It's more like, not tonight, I'm going to stay home in the hope that someone else might wash my hair for me. It's meant to shut down the conversation, and it's also what kids today and readers of the Daily Mail would call virtue signalling, shorthand for our work is so good we don't have to get involved in the grubby business of selling. Thing is, there is a perfectly valid response, which is, like, duh, or words to that effect. Everyone knows that referrals and recommendations are the best source of new business. It's patently, blatantly obvious. It's the same reason people read reviews on Amazon before buying. So the next question you need to ask is, right, so what are you doing to ensure that you get plenty of leads through referral? And the chances are, the answer is nothing at all. asking for referrals is one of the last great taboos of new business, despite the fact that all BS aside, every client relationship is a business relationship, and doing business, by definition, involves selling. Proactive referral marketing should form part of any new business integrated strategy, because any agency that wants to keep the wolves from the door needs to fire a few well-aimed silver bullets amid the scattershot activity. Otherwise, you may find you've been firing blanks. Metaphorically speaking, of course.
Sometimes, in new business, fortune favours the brave. That means stepping into the void and out of your comfort zone. And this week, I sure did that. Nick Galanides is a highly talented ex-ad industry short film director, and for a long time I've been admiring his irreverent advice that he dispenses from his window on LinkedIn. So I took a risk and reached out to see if he'd be interested in appearing on the show. Unusually, he had no real reason to talk, but he agreed, leaving me to come up with a theme. So here we have it. Me and Nick Galanides on a show with no theme. Take two, action. Well, like every good podcast, this one's got an interesting story behind it. My guest this week agreed to come on the show because I just had to meet the film director and producer who seems to amuse himself on LinkedIn by lobbing verbal turds at outspoken people. Small one-liners designed to make the reader smile, and they often do. Anyway, back to the story. I spoke to him briefly on a pre-call just to find out what subjects pushed his buttons, and it turns out he didn't have anything to promote, nothing to sell, and pretty much the square root of zip to pitch. Okay, I said, that's a challenge, and I'll meet it. A show about nothing. There's a great scene on the 80s sitcom Seinfeld when Jerry and George are trying to come up with an idea for their show to pitch to the guys at ABC. George comes up with the idea of making the show about nothing, and Jerry loves it.
See, this should be the show. This is the show.
What?
Yes, just talk.
Yeah, right.
No, I'm really serious. I think that's a good idea.
Just talking? Well, what's the show about?
It's about nothing.
No story?
No, forget the story.
You gotta have a story.
Who says you gotta have a story?
Now, I had a bunch of questions prepared, and then on the eve of the recording, disaster. Something that I did, I managed to overwrite the file, and all my cleverly, patiently thought out questions were lost to a far-flung corner of the hard drive, never to be retrieved. So now we got a show about nothing with no preparation, like Alan Partridge on steroids. So we're just going to riff on the idea of film, and that's one of my first loves that my parents actually approved of. But I will try not to make this show about two blokes nerding out on film. So now I've set the scene of a show about nothing with no structure. Let's get to it. And welcome aboard Nick Galanides. Taxi for Nick, anyone? Hello, Nick.
Hi, how are you doing?
I'm very well, thanks. Thanks for coming on the show. And
that's a nice introduction, thank you.
Well, I was, I was kind of attracted to all your LinkedIn musings, which are a sort of a refreshing change from, and anybody that's listening to the show that hasn't seen Nick's LinkedIn stuff, it's pretty unique, and it's genius, and it's very sardonic and quite funny to read. So I appreciate
about nothing, basically.
Yeah, exactly.
Was it King Lear who said nothing comes of nothing? I think that's what this will be about.
Well, you know your Shakespeare better than I do, but just for the record, now we don't know each other very well, do we?
No, we don't. No.
Right. So this has got the potential to go completely wrong. So bear with me. Okay. So first, the company name, Taxi for Nick. Where did you get that from, and how did that come about?
Taxi for Nick, it actually came back from, it came from my advertising agency days, where I would sort of go into serious meetings and say the most inappropriate things. you'd walk in and they'd be like full of cliches, and people would be saying things like, oh, we're swimming in the same resource pool. And I just couldn't bear it. So I started coming up on my own, like, we're going caravanning with our own apron. And people go, yeah. I kind of understand, but a couple would kind of understand where I'm coming from, and they would just go, Taxi for Nick. And it kind of stuck. So every meeting from then on, they knew that I was going. It's not a Tourette's. It's kind of like I just get bored.
Sure.
It just came from there. And then when I formed my company about 3 years ago, I was looking for a name. And my friend Pam, who works in London as a radio producer, she goes, Nick, it's got to be Taxi for Nick. And I just thought, actually, that's pretty spot on. But what is funny about it is people think I am actually a taxi firm. So I get inquiries go, how much is it to Stafford, Nick? And I always reply, about £8, you know. So that's where the name comes from, basically.
Fantastic. So it's just like a kind of pull the ripcord, I'm out of here type thing.
Yeah, you know, there's a fast show over here. It's called the Fast Show. And there was a line that just says, I'll get my coat. And it's that kind of, oh, God, you know, I could just see people just going like that, basically, when I'd say something. And it generally wasn't a performance. It was, I just got bored.
Yeah.
I hate those low-hanging fruit. What does that mean? So I would literally invent my own, or I'd just say something really ridiculous, and the bosses would just...
So were you the guy that came up with the bullshit bingo game?
No, I didn't, but I love playing that one. But I just don't understand meetings at all. I think there was an agency in London, I don't know if it was W&K, but they wouldn't have a meeting that lasted more than like 15 minutes, and that was my kind of meeting. I'd just lose the will to live. So that's really where the name came from. And it's kind of, you know, it's stuck, and people like it, so I've kept with it, really.
So you're kind of, you're living life in 15-minute intervals, are you? Is that how it's getting?
Tell you something, yeah. It feels like that at the moment, doesn't it? But I have a very, very low attention span.
What was that? What was the movie Memento, wasn't it? When
That went backwards, didn't it?
Yes, and the guy had a 15-minute memory.
I think mine's 15-second. Goldfish memory, to be honest.
So anyway, I mean, into the sort of talking of, you know, sort of 15 minute sort of segments. You specialize, or, you know, obviously I was kind of interested by your making of short films.
Yeah.
What kind of got you, I mean, what was your career like? What got you into the filmmaking to start off with?
Basically I was working obviously in advertising probably for about 25, 30 years. And one day I was working with a guy, I don't know if you've heard of him, called James Nesbitt. He's an actor over here.
Yes, I do know him. Yeah, well, not know him. I know of him.
Manchester.
Yeah.
And I was working with him, and we just got talking. I was saying, oh, I've got an idea for a film, mate. And he was going, well, you should write it down. And I thought, yeah. And I never did. But every time we kept working on the same campaign, he goes, did you ever write that down? And I said, no, I'm not. And then I think one day I went back and thought, actually, I really should, because he seemed to like the idea. So for the next 2 years after that, every day to work on the train, I started writing films. I started writing short films and feature films. And, yeah, it was actually for 2 years. And then I just left it. And then I think I met him again. He goes, did you ever write this thing? And he goes, actually, yes, I did. And he read it and he goes, Nick, this is quite interesting. So I found a film production company, and I decided to make the film, and I actually used my own money. It was self-financed to do it. And that was the first film I made, which was Mustn't Grumble. So it's really like a stage on from my TV and cinema ads that I did, but it allowed me to sort of undo the straitjacket I was in, and I actually could put in my own thoughts, and I actually could swear in it as well, which was quite useful. So that's really where it came from, and it's developed in the last probably 4 or 5 years, getting to a point where when I formed my own company, I wanted it to be 50% film script writing and 50% advertising. But unfortunately, it's not been like that, because the film, trying to get money for films is an absolute killer. It's a nightmare. It's probably been about 85%, 15% in advertising, really. But I'm still ploughing away.
Well, I mean, you know, it's interesting. We'll probably touch on this later on. But, I mean, I was kind of... obviously looking at other short films that are available on, you know, things like Netflix and stuff. I mean, has the available, the kind of on-demand TV now, I mean, do you think that's kind of freed up the market slightly, and that there is now more interest in the short movie industry, and that there is a bit of funding now because there's a kind of, there's more channels for it, more platforms for it?
Definitely. In fact, there's a channel that my first film went on called Shorts International, which takes short films all around the world, and they're shown in every corner of the world. So that's one channel. And there was another channel called some of the Shorts channel as well. So it's starting to really take off. I think a lot of it is people just haven't got the attention or the time poor at the moment. So they can watch films that last probably a maximum of about 30 minutes, and that's their lot. They haven't got the time to do 2-hour movies. So more and more people are finding actually short films is quite digestible, really.
It's an art form. It's quite interesting because I mean, obviously, you know, in advance of this, I was watching some of your stuff and sort of seeing what was available, and I think in the sort of prequel that I mentioned to you, it reminded me of something that the great Malcolm Gladwell said recently about adverts and short films, and that he really kind of admired people that can sort of capture, inspire, and move people in a very, very short space of time, you know, so that there's something to say and say it quickly. And like you say, I mean, you know, I love short films because I've got a very short attention span, and I think it's very kind of it captures the moment, because I think people do have shorter attention spans now. And I mean, certainly when I see 15 minutes on the time code, I'm all in.
you look at the TV, you know, output at the moment, and a lot of it is short, sharp dramas that last 30 minutes, and that's it, basically. You know, yeah, there are some that last an hour, but I haven't got the attention span to get more than 30 minutes. And strangely enough, that has come from an advertising world where I would write 30 or 40 second ads.
Yeah.
And when I first started writing films, my films were 30 or 40 seconds long, actually.
Sure.
And it's taken me about 15 years to get up to half an hour. To be able to write for half an hour, and I think it's going to take me another 5 years, although I've written feature films, to get to an hour and an hour and a half. And it sounds strange, but it's a completely different discipline from the advertising world, and I've had to relearn how to write longer, if you see what I mean.
Well, you know, it's great. It's very interesting that you said that, because I had a show recently with a stand-up comedian, or a guy that does stand-up comedy, Jeremy Davis, and he was talking about the big difference that you have to go through, or kind of the wall of pain that you go through when you go from 2 to 3 minutes to 10 to 15 minutes.
Yeah.
It's, you know, it's a big long leap, because, you know, trying to keep people engaged and amused for 3 minutes is very, very different from trying to do it for, you know, for 15 minutes. And then, you know, it brings a whole new kind of perspective when you look at the stand-up comedians that do the stadiums and stuff and do one and a half hour shows and stuff. You know? And I guess that's probably the same. But I mean, do you think short films are a kind of a specialty? I mean, that people, because I mean, I couldn't imagine someone like Peter Jackson or James Cameron or someone, you know, sort of doing short films.
I think they probably started out doing short films though.
Do you think it's a kind of a learning proving ground?
I think it's a learning curve. I think it's also a calling card for many directors as well to actually get their name about. And if you haven't got that, if you haven't got your £10 million, then you can actually make a short film for £30,000 and use that actually for the next step up in the ladder. In fact, I know that for a fact. I've got a friend who won. He did a short film. He was in advertising. Then he did a short film that lasted about 20 minutes. And he won a BAFTA for that. And since that, he's now the director of Downton Abbey and a new film coming out called The Book Thief. So he started off doing ads, went into short films, and then, like myself, wanting to go into feature films. And he's done that, and he's very, very successful. So to me, it's like a calling card.
Okay, because I noticed actually that one of the director of one of the recent Batman movies has sort of gone back into making short movies, short horror movies. So I think there could be and certainly there's a kind of a renaissance of that as an art form. I mean, you just got to look at YouTube and stuff, and you just see there's a great trove of short movies there.
I think a lot of this is budget related though as well. Right. It is just so expensive. You know, you don't do a film for under 5 million these days, and just the money isn't around. And so people are actually you can make a good film for 10 grand, a short film these days. So I think that's what's happening. There's a lot of self-financing. So you don't have to, you know, get the tick from a big production company. You can self-finance your own film.
Yes.
You can't afford 10 million, but you can afford, if you've got that money, you know, 5-10 grand to make your film. So I think it is becoming,
And there's crowdfunding available now as well, obviously, which is quite an interesting, interesting area.
Actually, I've never known anybody make more than about 6 grand from crowdfunding for a film.
Okay.
So yes, you can sort of pay a few hotel bills and the cast, but it doesn't pay for the rest of it.
Right, right. A few shows back, I did a podcast with a bunch of guys who work in the ad industry that run an ad agency called Beehive.
Okay.
And we were discussing the kind of fundamental drivers of creativity. Mm. And it comes out that one of the main ways to be creative was theft. Not obviously outright theft, but sort of appropriation or being inspired by. And there's a similar story in a piece of your work in The Blind Man. I was just wondering if you could just go through that for us. How did that sort of relate to appropriation?
Blind Man was a video I made probably, I think, about 2004, and it was really to sell myself as a copywriter. The reason is it was like an anecdote that David Ogilvy spoke about, and he was talking about, he saw this blind man with a sign that just says, "I am blind." And he says, what happened is a guy came up and added the word, "and it is spring." And that, to him, encapsulates what a copywriter does. Just by adding a few words, changing a few words around, "and it is spring." And suddenly he didn't have money, and then it was, you know, pouring with money and all that. So that was his way of explaining what a writer does. I thought, that's quite interesting. So I turned it into a video. And it did very well, actually. But the interesting thing about it is then two other companies saw, well, I presume they saw my video. One did another version of it and won the Cannes Grand Prix with it. Wow. And another place up in Edinburgh, called, I think they were called Purple Feather, did another version of it and got 30 million views from it. They didn't say that they nicked the idea, but I nicked the idea from David Ogilvy. And in my own little sphere, it did well, but theirs just went monumentally, you know. And I was a little bit annoyed that they didn't credit me. Then I thought, well, no, you nicked the idea anyway, so it doesn't matter. But I got my own back, because some in awards, there was a category that said, best use of plagiarism, and so I put them in for it and won the award for it.
Your version is beautifully done. Is it shot, because it's shot to, it almost looks like it's in Super 8 or something, is that?
It's a hand-cranked camera where you miss out frames, and it was deliberately done like that in Manchester on probably one of the hottest days of the decade kind of thing. And it was all done for free, and the production company I'd worked with before just says, we'll do it for you for free, and they just did a great job. And, you know, I had an idea about music, and they said, no, you complete rubbish, Nick, and they put their own music on, and that worked really well, and the whole thing was nice. And to be honest, the other two executions that I've seen that have done really well were nice as well.
Right.
It's just that you just think, well, you could have said something, you could have asked.
You got the original version of it.
Yeah. And, you know, I put it on my website, and it's a good tool, actually, at the moment when we're all looking for work, for me to say, this is what a writer does, and this is what me as a writer does. You know, I can transfer no money into a lot of money.
It's a great idea. So that's a fantastic sales tool. And yeah. Also on the website, there's a story about a woman with a grumbly tummy medical condition.
Yes.
I mean, what on earth inspired you to write that?
My brain's wired a bit strange. In fact, that's what a creative person is. If you ask me what creativity is, that is it. My brain is wide odd. That's my first foray into filmmaking, actually. Right. It's called Mustn't Grumble, and it's about 15 minutes long. And it's actually a medical condition called borborygmi that I have suffered from in the past. And what it does, when you're hungry and your tummy rumbles,
yeah,
fine, you can usually eat something and that gets rid of the grumble. But mine would grumble at the most inappropriate times, but really loudly. At first, it was embarrassing. And after a bit, I kind of embraced it a little bit. You know, I thought, this is quite funny. And you know, I was on the jury service once, and it was a really, really quite a strange case. And it was really quiet. And suddenly went... and everybody just burst out laughing. And it was funny. But then I started reading about it a little bit more, and I realised actually that some other people, it was a really debilitating illness to the point embarrassing would almost, the embarrassment would actually kill them. They couldn't live with it, and they would actually commit suicide. And it started sparking off in something in me about this film, which I then sort of dramatized the idea, and that's where the idea for the film came from, to be honest.
It's lovely. It's a very very sort of touching little thing, a little vignette really, but I was just fascinated as to the core of the inspiration there. Now, I mean, you said that just earlier that obviously you were talking about sort of awards and the BAFTAs, etc. I mean, do you think that, like, you know, if you as a director, if you set out to make an award-winning film, do you think that that kind of almost puts the kibosh on it? Do you think it's doomed to fail if you do that?
I don't think it's doomed to fail, but I'm not a big fan of awards at all, especially in advertising, because in advertising, everything is about awards. And after, I was the same. I used to want to get onto that stage and pick up an award. But then I sat back and just thought, hold on a minute, this is not right. And when I became a judge, I kind of realised a lot of it is just kind of like, what's the right word? It's kind of made up, I suppose. And I think I really started going against the awards ceremonies, and especially in charity advertising. I think charity advertising and awards should be banned, because what are you doing the award for? To win what, you know, you've got to be authentic about it. You've got to believe in the charity. It's not about the agency picking up an award or you picking up the award. It's trying to encourage people to pick up the phone.
So is there a habit of, you know, sort of agencies doing pro bono work for charities on the basis that they will put this up for an award and they'll get their remuneration another way?
Yeah.
It's
overgeneralizing, but I would say a lot of agencies will come up with an idea, and I've been in meetings, we'll go, the first question is, will it win an award, rather than will it actually attract more people to this cancer charity or to the MS thing that we want to talk about? And it really, really upset me. And that's why when I had I did a charity ad for my friend called A Child of Mine, which was for a child bereavement society.
Yes.
And it's very sad. And but she wanted to do it, and she wanted to raise awareness. And it's a nice, you know, a nice film. But the people go, well, why have you not entered it into awards? So, why would I do that? You know, it's not about me. It's about trying to raise awareness. And they'll go, oh, yeah, but with awards, you'll increase the... No, it doesn't.
No.
No, it doesn't increase awareness of amongst a few advertising people. They're not interested. So I'm very, very anti-awards for charities. Not so much for... I mean, I love creativity, and it's fine that you can win awards, but it's not where I am anymore.
No. But I mean, obviously you still work in the ad agency world, don't you? As a business. I mean, is it generally kind of more difficult if an agency comes to you and says, okay, well, look, here's a car, here's a bunch of money. Can you go and make a film about it? I mean, is it more difficult when that's the driver rather than it coming from you? I guess it's a different process, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, if you think it's better, don't you? People throw loads of money to do what you want, but I don't think it sharpens the mind, to be honest, because if you've got a certain budget, then you have to be creative in the ways that you meet that budget. Whereas someone gives you, I don't know, £500,000 to do an ad, and I have done that before, you're kind of like, you're a bit lazy with the idea, to be honest. I was actually thinking back about, I think I did some Alliance and Leicester, if I'm allowed to say that, commercials a few years ago in South Africa.
Say what you want on here, Nick.
Yeah. We did them in South Africa, and the budget was like, I don't know, $750,000 for two or three ads. And we just pissed the money away. We stayed in a fantastic place with swimming pools, and we're treated like gods. And we could have probably done it for $100,000. I quite like the idea of saying, right, this is all we've got, make it work. And then I think that's when your creativity really comes to the fore.
That's very true, and I think that seems to be the point, is that the genesis of some of the greatest ideas have never been because there was a pile of money on the table. You know, I mean, that's always seems
soaked away. If someone says I've got $500,000 for your next film, Nick, I'd say great, bring it on. You know,
I can think of something.
Yeah, yeah. But you know, the money thing, no.
Yeah. Well, look, on a different but kind of related track, I mean, I'm going to sort of say something slightly controversial and point out that, despite obviously the personal and economic loss and financial jeopardy that the whole world's going through at the moment, I mean, from a creative perspective, you know, if there is a silver lining to this, I mean, it has inspired some people to focus on doing some sort of pretty imaginative stuff, you know. And I mean, obviously, you know, you get some that have gravitated towards something like TikTok Well, in fact, I'll tell you what, let's just go down that rabbit hole for a second, because from a filmmaker's perspective, TikTok, is that a good thing or a bad thing?
I think it's actually quite a good thing. I think it's quite a good introduction to storytelling and filmmaking for a lot of people. However, I don't think there's really a filter to filter out the dross, if you see what I mean. And that's my problem with it, is that there's some really imaginative ideas. Some of the camera angles I've not seen before, and it's great that anybody can do it. But what it does produce is some absolute garbage as well.
Sure.
And you do kind of think, ooh.
I mean, it's almost like, I guess if you were doing a film production course, yeah, it's almost like a test that you would give somebody. Back in the day, you know, 10 years ago, you might say to somebody, okay, you've got 15 seconds, make a film, you know, tell a story in 15 seconds.
But what they're not doing is...
Is it 15? I don't know. How long is it? How long is TikTok?
There's a template, isn't there? Is it about a minute at the most?
I don't know.
I don't even know. I mean, I do watch them, but what they lack is just a story to them.
Yes.
You know, a real, proper, interesting, imaginative story. Yes, you've got some great stylized camera angles. Yes, you've done something a little bit. But where's your idea? And that's what I think is lacking. And I think it's just, and it's not aimed at me. I mean, it's aimed at what audience is it? Is it 15 to 20? I don't know really.
TikTok. Yes, I think it's from the people that are just a couple of years younger than me, about the 15.
Yeah, right. Yeah. but it is a great way to introduce people to actually, you know, to become storytellers and filmmakers, but they've got to realise you've got a story to tell. You've got to have that story. There's no use TikToking something about a shampoo bottle, because It was interesting. Well, maybe they are. I don't know.
Well, you never know. But
yeah.
I mean, you know, the crazy thing is now that, you know, with technology, you know, we've all got the equivalent of a, you know, a small Hollywood studio on a phone. And obviously the ability to bypass the normal publishing process and to turn films into a direct to consumer sort of publishing business. I mean, it was like that, you know, the in terms of the technology, did you ever see that Searching for Sugar Man?
I didn't watch it, but I've read about it. Yeah.
Fantastic movie. It's about this musician, Rodriguez, and he was a big hit in the 70s, 60s, I think, in South Africa. And then he just disappeared. And this guy was like, went on a quest to find him. And he turned up in a poor old house in Detroit somewhere, and he revived his career. And I mean, basically, if the whole world now, obviously with the exception of me, because I don't actually own a smartphone. Yes, I do not own a smartphone. Isn't that amazing?
I'm quite impressed with that. Well, I've got a smartphone, but I've no idea of half the features on it. I know what you're saying. Basically, you're saying anybody now has got the technology to be a film director or a film producer.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, so so if everybody can do that, you're the guy with the skills and the chops to be able to pull this off. What happens to you? Do you get into teaching or, you know, whatever? I mean,
I'll go into a man cave and never appear again. I mean, it's a good point. I like the idea that anybody can come up with and direct a movie, but as long as they've got the story behind it, you know, it has to be interesting and it has to be imaginative. And I think that's perhaps where what I've got a little bit above some others is that I have a story in my head that I can do. Yes, it's fine that you've got all the technology and it's style, but where's the substance to it? And I think that's what professional people have still got over and above everybody else at the moment. So that's where I
go.
Yeah, it needs an idea. And I've always say bland is banned as well. It's really important because I see a lot of people with the technology, but it is boring as hell what they produce, and you really, really need to be creative with it.
Well, okay, on a related point, and seeing as this isn't a film discussion podcast, right, but it actually has a business development slant to it, and you know, we sort of on that topic, we do a lot of sort of talking about things like, you know, content distribution or sales using different media for the purpose of promotion and stuff. And you've come from that background, you know, with everybody now sort of basically consuming so much on-demand media. I mean, do you think that short films can now become a kind of a much more accessible medium for brands and agencies to, you know, to use just, you know, through all the different channels that we have?
They are already. I mean, you just have to go online and onto a website of the brand, and they're what's the first thing you see is a 2 or 3 minute little film that they've produced and all that. And some are producing 5 minute films, some are producing 10 minute films. So yeah, that's the way forward, I think. And I think brands will use that much more. However, they've got to be careful that people don't switch off after 10 seconds. So again, it has to be imaginative because people will switch off if you know, anything over. When I write video content for film, for brands, I always give myself 90 seconds because I think that's their limit.
Right.
But if the story is good enough, then yes, it can be 5 minutes, it can be 10. But I have seen some corporate ones that go for 15 and I'll lose the will to live after about 2 minutes. Well, no, 2 seconds, to be honest.
I mean, there has been a rather kind of an embarrassing sort of dirge of fake emotion coming out on movies at the moment with the pandemic. You know, lots of I think it was Vic Lee, the illustrator who I had on the show, was basically saying that, you know, it's like the sort of thing that goes through an emotional film sort of app, you know, where you just sort of put in the beginning, the middle, and the end, and it sort of turns it out for you. I mean,
John Lewis.
John Lewis.
John Lewis. You know the company John Lewis?
Yeah, sure.
They just pour in the emotion, and it's almost templated now. And I must be one of the only people in advertising who can't bear their adverts.
It's funny you should say that, because there is a big rush. I mean, you know, it's almost become like the Oscars now, hasn't it? The Christmas advert. I mean, it's quite an interesting sort of gunfight that's developed.
There's a backlash against it now. So people go, oh, my God, we're not. And especially, how are we going to do one this year with the COVID thing going on? You know, I don't know what they're going to do.
I think, it creates an interesting dilemma, because obviously there's a fine balance to strike. But
I just find it sentimental mush. I just honestly, I think the first one or two, yeah, I quite like them. And I thought these are interesting. But honestly, now I much, much prefer things like the IKEA stuff that comes out. And I think actually that's nice. It's clever. Not for me.
Well, I mean, obviously you've labelled yourself as somewhat technically challenged, and I'm kind of a little hesitant to go there, but
please do.
Well, you know, a guy with your talent has really got the sort of ability to blow most of everyone away if you decided to get into, you know, vlogging or video casting and stuff. I mean, is that an area that you're kind of into exploring, or are you going to sort of, is that not interesting?
I think my wife calls it, why would anybody be interested in your vague, unimportant thoughts?
I've got a podcast about that very thing.
Why would anybody be interested in what I've got to say? I don't understand it, you know. I mean, no. what have I got different to say? I really haven't, to be honest. So, no, it's not anything I would go down.
It's not a medium that you're going to be taking.
No, unless someone paid.
Anytime soon. Yeah, sure.
No, it's not for me.
Well, okay. Well, look, again, sort of in a similar vein. I mean, now that obviously, I mean, this conversation being a great example, we're all broadcasting from little boxes like it used to be on Celebrity Squares or something. I mean, do you have you got any tips for people about, and this is obviously serious now, I mean, about how to create a great scene or vignette for something like Zoom or Teams or something? I mean, is there a point to doing it? Does it matter?
Serious. Don't be ugly. And don't be boring.
But I mean, in terms of a background and things like that, I mean, is it something?
Look at my background. Honestly, it's my bathroom version. I don't care. It's what you've got to say. I'm not interested in the rest of it. No. So I can't give you any tips. Just be authentic, you know. Who gives a toss about the background?
Well, because we're all now working from home or working, you know, you've got kids, sort of kids running around in the background and things like that.
It's funny.
You think that adds a degree of humanity to the whole thing?
I hate professionalism, as you can probably tell. There's been a glass ceiling for me for many years because I just don't do things professionally. I just enjoy it, have fun. Yes, I work hard and all that, but please don't take it seriously. We're not saving anybody's life here. You know, films and advertising, not saving anybody's lives. Just smile a bit.
Fantastic. So talking of which, I mean, how does Nick earn his crust? I mean, what projects are you working on?
He doesn't earn his crust at the moment.
you did say you didn't have anything to promote, so I was worried about asking that question.
No, it was my business was for 2 months furloughed, to be fair.
Right.
It just, all the advertising work I had just completely fell off. Now I'm on a sort of flexible furlough, so when I get some work in, I can obviously do that and keep some money from the furlough, which I'm very, very lucky, because there's 3 million people out there who are getting absolutely bugger all, and I feel so sorry for them.
It must sure.
just be horrendous. So what's happening at the moment is all my film stuff's on hold completely. It's just not happening at all. And so I'm really just going back into my advertising work at the moment, and I'm having to go further and further afield to actually get work. So, you know, I'm going to places like Hong Kong to get stuff, and Australia and America. I'm finding any work around here actually really difficult. This is in the UK, finding it ever so hard.
Because of the lockdown?
Because of the lockdown and cuts, redundancy. Honestly, it's just an awful situation at the moment over here. I mean, I'm lucky that a few people know my name and I can get bits and bobs of work, but
right.
I'm getting by, and I feel really lucky about that because there's so many people who I just read, and it's heartbreaking. You know, it's horrible.
I know it is. I fear that we're kind of, this is the tip of the spear rather than the blunt endy bit. But presumably that means that you're going to be kind of doing more in the sort of field in the advertising and marketing game. I mean, stuff like that.
I've got a project on film wise, and it's a film called it's about half an hour called Unhug. And it's going to be directed by somebody from Sherlock. So I can't actually say who it is. But,
okay.
But it's, you know, it's very exciting for me anyway. But again, it's on hold at the moment, so we can't do anything with that at the moment. However, I have released the screenplay of Unhug on Amazon as a book that you can buy for 99p, basically. So people can go on and actually read it first before we actually make the film.
Oh, there you go, folks. Anybody listening, go and help Nick out and go and download. So it's called Unhug.
Unhug, UNHUG.
Okay, and that's on Amazon.
But honestly, it's quite rough at the moment. I just wanted people to have something to read, really, and they kind of understand me a little bit more. But it is being turned into quite a major. It will be about a 30-minute film. That's it. That's in the pipeline. And then there was a feature film meant to be this year, but that's not going to happen at all. So I reckon that's in a couple of years' time as well. Okay. So, yeah, I mean, there's projects in the film industry. But nothing I can, you know, really do at the moment. So I've gone back into my advertising mode at the moment and just making a living doing that. So, you know, I'll get by.
So anybody out there who's interested in ad agency land, who's interested in getting Nick, they can get hold of him through all the usual channels that we'll put on the website anyway. But you know, I think it'd be useful because obviously we do now have, I'm proud to boast, we do have an international reach. So
Yes, indeed.
So you never know, you might find yourself doing something in New Zealand thanks to us. But
It's really useful to. I am finding more and more work outside of the UK, which is really interesting. You know.
Well, I would have thought that places that are kind of post COVID now, you know, sort of China and you know, sort of the Asian markets and stuff, where things are kind of coming back to life, is that there might be some options over there for you. So,
worried that my writing style wouldn't match, you know, the way, but. It seems to be fine at the moment. I mean, I'm not getting tons and tons of work from there, but I'm getting enough, you know, to get by. But the ad agency scene here is just in a terrible state. It really is.
Well, I don't think that, you know, I mean, I speak from no confidence about this, or from a position of authority on this. But I mean, from what I've heard, that there isn't a great deal going on in terms of sort of incentives for filmmaking in the UK at the moment.
No. Who's got the money to do that? I'm getting involved in a place called Create Central, which is like the new Midland screen kind of industry. And it's headed up by the guy who wrote Peaky Blinders, is Stephen Knight. And that would be about mentoring people in the immersive storytelling. So there are options, you know, and there are things and opportunities going on. But that was meant to be, I think it was July, and it's been put back till next year straight away because we can't obviously meet and all that. So there are opportunities, but I think we're going to have to wait.
Yeah, we've got to get this thing out of the way first, haven't we?
Yeah, well, whether we do, I don't know.
So, I mean, you alluded to it sort of earlier on. I mean, in terms of sort of music and stuff like that. I mean, you're multi-talented, I understand. I mean,
not really.
do you play any instruments?
No.
Okay.
I can sing really, really badly. Really badly.
So you turn to because I noticed obviously some of your short movies and stuff have got some nice music attached to them. I mean, is this sort of your is this how you sort of bring amateur musicians to light?
No, I had a record label for about 15 years. And I released quite a few singles and lost hundreds of thousands of pounds basically doing it. And however, I have kept in touch with a lot of musicians who've actually gone on to do really well. So I've got a couple of videos of that I've helped write the treatment for people on my website. But they're not amateur. They're actually quite well known. I mean, one of the guys I think is a guy called Gavin Martin, and he's the actual musical correspondent for the Daily Mirror, and he's branched out into it. And a lot of my friends are actually in quite well known bands, so I am heavily into music.
You float around the celeb world then, do you?
Well, I just be a bit of a lovey around them, to be honest. No, I know quite a few through the record label, and I just love my music, always have.
Well, okay. Well, on that subject then, because we are collecting tracks for the Fuel Podcast mixtape.
Oh, okay.
Issue 2, I'll have you know, we've already closed the gate on issue 1, but yeah. So this will kick off the second one, we've appropriated the Radio 4 format but we've decided to call it the Isolation Island disc. Have one track that you would you threw three at me, and am I allowed to pick which one?
You can do, but I mean, I'm a punk rocker at heart, a punk indie guy at heart. But the track that I like the best of all is Hallelujah by Rufus Wainwright.
Thank God. I picked that one too.
Yeah. It's one of those songs that my auntie can sing and it will still be brilliant.
It is fantastic. I hadn't heard that version. I mean, I was a big fan of the Jeff Buckley version, but it's a great track. He's got such a beautiful voice.
I'm trying to work out whether his version is the one on the Shrek movie or not. I can't work it out.
Yeah, could be.
I think it's Rufus's version on that.
Well, he's a very interesting guy, and I mean, I just did a quick bit of research on him, because obviously he comes from musical royalty anyway. But I stumbled across this great piece of info, and I've got to share this now. I've just got to put a caveat on this. I don't want to mock any addictions, but you just got to listen to this. There's a saying, right, that goes that nobody parties harder than the addict the night before rehab. Okay,
right.
But how about this as a farewell to drugs? This is Rufus Wainwright. Okay,
right.
It says, Wainwright became addicted to crystal meth in the early 2000s and temporarily lost his vision. His addiction reached its peak in 2002 during what he describes as, quote, the most surreal week of my life. During that week, get this, he played a cameo role in the UK comedy TV show Absolutely Fabulous. He spent several nights partying with George W. Bush's daughter, Barbara. He enjoyed a debauched evening with his mother and Marianne Faithfull, and sang with Anohi from Anthony and Johnson's for Zoldy's Spring 2003 collection, and experienced recurring hallucinations of his father throughout. He decided after that he was either going to rehab or going to go and live with his father. How about that?
Well, the strange thing about him is I'm not his biggest fan, actually, because I've got a couple of his albums and I can't listen to them.
He's just got such a crystal clear voice. It's
Marmite,
beautiful.
Isn't it?
It's I think he's...
but it's the same with Jeff Buckley.
Well, true. You either do love them or hate them, don't you? He's got a...
It's not...
good tribute to Donald Trump called Sword of Damocles, which is worth listening to as well.
Yeah, I'm a you know, a big fan of the punk and the indie scene, but there are a couple of tracks like Hallelujah and Abide With Me that just kill me and fold me up, really. And that's why I think the Rufus Wainwright would be top of my list.
Okay. All right. Well, that's fair enough. Now, everybody has, like I said before, has got a bookshelf behind them, and we're stacking it with recommendations for our guests, and some are pretty radical. So what's your book recommendation for us?
I'm not actually a big reader, which is strange from a writer and all that. So I haven't got any radical recommendations whatsoever. I like writers like Ben Elton, actually, which is quite sort of just mainstream. But nothing if I had to pick one, it would be, I think, John Green's Fault in Our Stars. I love that.
Well, just out of interest, just to let you know, that was actually set in Indianapolis, where I am. So interesting story. And I've never read the book, but I was aware of the movie. But it's something that I'll have to get into. And it has that big quote in it that getting hurt in this world is unavoidable, but we do get to choose who we allow to hurt us.
Exactly. Yeah, that's exactly it.
And so on that philosophical note, Nick, we're going to leave it there. But I just want to thank you very much for being a great sport and for spending some time with us.
It's been great to
chat to you at last. And as I say, I just had to meet the man behind the musings on LinkedIn. So thank you very much for carving some time out for us.
I just want to say for people actually reading my LinkedIn musings, look, my company is called Taxi for Nick. It's not serious. Please don't take what I'm saying as serious, because some people do.
Well, that's just the way it goes. Again, I mean, you can't say anything these days without upsetting someone. But I think it's always good that you have a point of view, and I think that's what people like you for. So stick with it, as far as I'm
concerned.
Lovely.
Thank you very much.
Well, I hope that whatever it is that you want to achieve now next year, as rewarding as this was for me, but because it's been fabulous. But so anyway, well, thank you, Nick. Take very good care of yourself. And I hope to see you soon. And I'll call you a cab.
Thank you very much.
And that's a wrap. Another unique interview in the can, and my warmest thanks to Nick for a great chat. Thank you. In the world of new business, we're all looking for an edge and a point of difference. So if you or your clients need help in the filmed content area, give Nick a call, and it's pretty obvious he'll give you an honest, straightforward response. My thanks also to my co-producer Donna, our in-house band, The Prospectors, that's St. Matthew, Barney and Memory Banks, all IT functionality provided by the team at Quijibo Design in downtown Indianapolis. So join us next time on The Fuel, the new business podcast sponsored by The Advertist, the new business development platform, when we'll be entertaining you with songs and sketches and jokes old and new, as well as a healthy dose of insight for the new business curious. And really, shouldn't that include you?